everyone. This is Hazel speaking. You're listening to the Curious Climber podcast. So, I'm actually on-siting this intro a little bit as a means to speed up the process of getting these podcasts out to you. We know that a lot of you are potentially a bit bored, potentially have a bit less going on than you usually do. You're most likely stuck at home with the rest of the half of the population of the globe now. And I've got a good podcast for you today. I think actually it's one of my favourites. I'm speaking to Naseem Eshki. Now, I don't actually know if I've pronounced her name correctly. I'll put in the notes if I've written it wrong, but you'll also see in the notes how to find her. So Naseem is a climber's climber, an all-round climber. You know, just to list off a few of her achievements, she's bolted and sent up to 8B. She's bolted several multi-pitches in Iran. She's opened close to 80 new routes in Armenia, Turkey, Georgia, India, Italy, and of course Iran, which is where she's from. As you may have noticed, on the Curious Climber podcast, we don't actually talk a whole lot about climbing. So what do we talk about? Well, Naseem gives us a very unique insight into what it's like to be a female climber living in Iran. She actually got into sports very early on, even though it's not exactly encouraged, and got into martial arts. Inspired by Bruce Lee, she was an Iranian kickboxing champion 10 times in a row. She absolutely smashed that and then got into climbing through university. So yeah, we don't talk a whole lot about her endless list of achievements. We really do focus on kind of her first-hand experience of being a woman in Iran and really as a non-conforming woman. We talk a lot about gender inequality under a conservative regime. We talk about what it was like to be into sports from a young age in a society that doesn't exactly support women's sports. We talk a lot about what she thinks female empowerment looks like and how we can use climbing as a tool for empowerment. We even touch upon the controversial topics of covering and religion. So, I mean, yeah, this was definitely one of my favourite podcasts. It's super rich, it's super insightful, and I don't know, I mean, I just feel really lucky to be able to talk to someone who I can have so much in common with from a climbing perspective, and then just have there be so many things that are different about our lives. And I just, yeah, I found it really interesting talking to Naseem, and I hope you do too. So yeah, I hope you're staying sane out there, everyone, and hope that if you're into these podcasts, they're providing a little bit of entertainment and interest for those long hours at home. And yeah, stay safe, and we'll keep these rolling out for you. Enjoy. Hi, Naseem. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Hi, Hazel. How are you? It's really nice to talk to you these days.
Yeah. I suppose we can just tell the listeners that we have recorded once before and we weren't super happy with the results, so we're going for it again. But I thought it was a really interesting conversation that we had, and it'll be cool to talk to you when you're a little bit more prepared. So obviously English is your second language, right?
Yeah. Yes, that's true. So it was, I didn't know what are the questions or what I have to talk about. So it was a little bit like a surprising questions. So I was not ready to put all my thoughts and answer very efficient, you know. So that's why I thought we can repeat it again, and then now we know more what's gonna happen, what's going on, so it's easier.
Also. Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I find it hard enough doing a podcast in my own language. So thank you for doing all of this in English. It must be really difficult. So I guess I just wanted to start by talking, because it's a bit topical, just to talk a little bit about the coronavirus and how that's affecting you, because obviously you're in Iran, you're in Tehran, and the news we're getting from outside Iran is that it's quite bad where you are. So it'd be cool to just hear a bit of a first-hand account, and also just if you let us know, you know, how are you doing? Like, are you healthy? How are your family? That kind of thing. That'd be nice to start with.
I mean, first of all, I can just say that I'm not a doctor, and then I'm not also a politician. So I don't really can have a whole picture of what is the best thing to do, to come out, run in the park, or not coming out at all. And I don't know what to say. But so I might miss some aspects also in general. So I can be wrong, but what I see and what I can observe is, I mean, in Iran, streets are really empty and roads are also empty. So, I mean, in compare with the population of people, it's really empty. But of course, people are outside and the government cannot support, or they don't support people with a basic income. So a lot of workers, which they get daily income, so they need their daily payment. They can't really stay at home because they have to work to earn something to eat. So for these exceptions, the quarantine doesn't really happen, but the government tried to stop the roads and limited the movement. Like during these days is our New Year, so people go to see their families in other cities, and the government tried to stop them. And also people, they by themselves, they stay at home a lot and they do things at home, which is I think not really bad, because then we read more book or we cook at home, we don't eat fast food so much anymore, which is not really bad. But in general, people try to do what they think is correct. Depends on the advices from the World Health Organization.
Yeah.
And yeah, probably is getting less. I mean, the what we hear from our friends in the hospital sometimes is different than what we hear in the news. So it's really difficult to see what we can believe or what we cannot believe. And about me, I try to go climbing if it's possible, and if the roads are closed, I don't go, but I go for a run. It's difficult to stay always at home, but rather than these things, yeah, I'm also at home reading books and watching movies and things like that, which everyone is doing now.
Yeah, it's kind of strange to be in this sort of similar situation to lots of people around the world, even though it's quite different. Lots of people around the world right now are staying at home, so it's kind of weird. We can sort of all in it together some ways. Yeah, it's good to hear that you're healthy anyway, and you can still go climbing from time to time. So yeah, maybe let's just get on to talking more about you. So maybe you could just tell us a little bit about what your upbringing was like, your kind of early years, what it was like being a young girl in Iran.
I was born in 1982. So in a very normal family, not really, not poor, not rich. And my father was very open-minded. In what I see now, when I look back, I see that during that time, I was lucky with this situation. But even though, you know, I born after the revolution, so the situation was very unstable and the ideas were not very stable, and people probably were confused about what happened and what is gonna happen, and probably our parents as well. And I don't remember what kind of a child I was because I was very small, but from what my parents and family says, I was a kind of hyperactive, very aggressive, and I was with a perseverance attitude. So that was what I've been told, that I was like that. And of course, the country was a male dominant country, as it is still. And I remember I was a very happy child anyway, from the time I remember. But then I was suffering a lot too, because I was hating my gender. Like, I didn't want to be a girl. And it was all because of the society and the schools or the family. Even though my father was very open-minded and thought, and always talk about, there is no difference between different genders, but still I didn't feel it. And I remember that I was wishing every day that to wake up tomorrow as a boy, but it never happened anyway. So that was what I remember from my childhood. And then, it was a little bit like growing up was difficult, as I see now, because of this confusing of the regime before and after, and I don't know, probably young parents. And then to the women, to the girls, the society was exactly like a hammer, especially the biggest hammer came exactly at the age of puberty, when you start to understand you have to behave as a girl. You have to learn to cook and, I don't know, make up your face to be accepted. I mean, anybody is beautiful. Everybody is beautiful. But that time, it felt like as a girl or as a woman, you have to do something on your face. And I think for me, they were really disgusting. So that's why I didn't want to be a woman, because I had no other picture. Everything was like, either you are like this, cooking at home and doing girly things, or nothing else. and I don't know. You know, it was like a kind of, you have to, if you were not interested in doing very delicate or girly stuff, then you always had to ignore yourself. You know, that you if I can explain, it was like, if you didn't want to be a girl like others, then you just have to step on your own self and be the same as others, or just suffer or get depression or something like this. And that was the hard part. But then when I grew up, it was much better and easier. And
wow, yeah, it sounds difficult. So it really felt to you like you had to conform to what was expected of you as a woman.
Yeah, somehow there were no other options. I mean, there were options, but because you are a child and you see only your parents and the family close to your parents, then even if there are other people living in different ways, you just don't see them unless you're lucky to see them later, or if you're born in a family which woman is also very independent. Then is a different story.
Okay. So if you did have a very independent mother, would you think you would have more freedom to kind of act in the way you wanted to act?
I think what happened was because my father always said, yeah, you are a girl, but you are better than a boy, but just in the sentence anyway. I think this word made me fight, or made me to have a support to fight a little bit more against the things I didn't want. So I was not really interested in having a doll, or I was not really interested in wearing skirts or dresses like other girls, or it was just not me. I don't know why, but I just didn't like it. And I constantly stay on my feet that I don't want it. And sometimes they made me accept to wear what I didn't want, and I don't know, things like that. But then what I remember, I always had to scream and cry and say, no, I don't want. And sometimes I was getting punished, but I don't know. Like all the children, that sometimes they think, oh, this is just an aggressive one, and we have to deal with it, probably like this. But then somehow this is out of my mind, how the world pulling us towards different things. And it was not in my hands so much. It was just, I had this attitude, which if I didn't want something, I really try to make my own, to stand on my own feet. And sometimes I succeed and sometimes not.
Right. Wow. And so the revolution was in, was it 79? The revolution?
Yeah.
And so, you know, do your parents talk about life before the revolution? And if they do, what do they say about it?
Yes, they were talking, everybody talks about before and after, because of course it was their life before, and then they voted to something which they wanted, and then the life was different after. So they were always comparing or things like that. But I think everybody was somehow confused. I don't know why, but just because it was a big wave and everybody wanted this different regime, which is independent, or probably doing opposite of the regime before. And then when it happened, probably, of course, not everybody get what they want from every revolution. And but we were not really a very political family. My parents, they were both teacher and lecturer. So they were really calm, and they were not having much to do with politics and things like that. We were doing more, we were more spending our time in the nature or parks and things like that. So I don't remember we had any big issue about these kind of talks.
Okay.
But yeah, but it was not a big deal in our family.
Okay. And you found sport early on in your life. What did that look like?
Yeah, in the beginning, when I was about 11, I started with martial arts, like karate, and then a little bit later with kickboxing. And that was just very something which it was not my decision. It just happened because we were watching a lot of Bruce Lee, and he was my idol. And then
that's so funny.
And to do any exercise or any sport, the very funny things always was to do this martial arts, or do things with a stick in your hand, turning this, or nunchaku, or things like that. And slowly, probably, it absorbed me towards the martial arts. And then it was just a small sport complex beside our house, and just very sudden, I saw myself in this in a summertime for the free time from school, and then I just continue after the summer. And it came with me. Then I was, I don't know, I was too much into this K1 competitions, and I'm watching their movies and learn what to do. And then all my brain were full of karate and kickboxing techniques. So everything, all my life, that time. And then, so it was a funny thing when I remember, but now when I look back, it was such a funny, beautiful moment. I done that for 15 years, and now I don't do anymore, but yeah, it was some time before.
Okay, so, I mean, what did your family think about you being so interested in kickboxing, and you know, what, how did they feel about that?
I think it was a kind of, you know, because I was, as the other people, my family said, I was very aggressive, and I was always, I wanted to say, I'm also strong like boys or whatever. Probably that was something which I can defend myself, or if someone hit me, I can hit back. So probably it came to my mind. And at the beginning, I remember when we were in high school, or even earlier, when I learned to defend myself, it was very nice to know that you are able to do something more, but you don't do. So you are able to hit somebody, but you don't, because they are just weak. So it was a kind of double confidence when you get that you get with the martial art. And yeah, it was in that time, it was not something normal, of course. Still is not something very normal for a girl or for a woman, but that time it was even worse. And my family always tried to stop me of doing this, and they were like, oh, this is not such a good thing you do. But they were not also so much against me doing a sport. More they said education is first, and sport is wasting time, as it is a big, big issue now. Or also now, sport is wasting time. And that time was on. So I continued, because I think I just needed this sport that time to spend my energy. Otherwise, probably I would do something really bad. I don't know what.
So it seems like it was sort of a way for you to kind of express yourself, and also kind of seems like it really empowered you and gave you confidence.
Yeah, it does. It did, really. And even now, sometimes I, when I see some of my friends or their children, because most of my friends have children now, then I always feel they need to put their girls to do martial arts. I think it's an art which give you confidence of, and not every action is very, you know, is painful, or if you get, I don't know, if you are in the street and if someone attack you with any reason, I don't know, then is not very scary if you already have done some body language, you say, I don't know. if you do some kicking or punching, is, I don't mean in an aggressive way, but you just to learn technique and how it feels if you get a punch. So then if you are very far from this kind of action, maybe you always afraid if anybody get close to you. But if you already felt, I don't know, a kick or a punch, probably you don't afraid so much of if someone come close to you, because you're aware of it's not very painful, so I can defend myself in front of, I don't know, some bad person or somebody who want to rob my bag or something like that. So I think for a lot of women who live in Iran, I can just talk about my own country with my own culture, I think it was not a bad thing. And it is not a bad thing to do a little bit of martial art.
Sounds good. Let's start talking about climbing. How did you start climbing?
Yeah, I started climbing when I was hiking in the mountains. So I was going up the Mount Damavand, which is 5,600 something. And I got altitude sick, so I had to come back. And in this group, which we were trying to do, I was in the failed group. So, and we had we had a guy with us, which he was in charge of the people who got some problem not to go on. So on the way back, he told me that there is also this sport exists, which called climbing, rock climbing. And that was first time I've heard. I was 23 that time, and I had no idea if this exists in Iran. And that was in a small gym, and there were, you know, like everywhere in the world, when you have a very basic gym, sometimes they put the hold on the concrete.
Yeah.
And it was some of the bars were like that, and some wooden part, and there were also some stones, the real stones, which they made a hole in the middle, so I screw it to the wall. So that was like this. But anyway, I started my first experience was outside in Polakhab, which is near, I mean, 1 hour, about 1 hour far from Tehran. And I, my first experience was there, which I tried to do this very easy route. Like, I think it was like it's easier than 6A or maybe 6A. And I didn't have climbing shoes. So I was with my boots, and then I was like a really weak person. And I was already a champion of kickboxing. And then I was there. I couldn't do anything with all my muscles and my, I don't know, fit body. And then I could see people without muscles doing much better than me. So then I felt like, wow, that is very exciting. Probably I needed that, because I really like this kind of challenge, which I really fail. And then I have to look why I failed with all my fitness. And that was a milestone point for me. So I fell in love, maybe like a masochist. And then I could not stop it after that. I had the fighting feeling and emotions, plus the being in outdoor situation, which is really nicer. So then I had to fight with my own self, not with other people. So it was even more interesting. It was something like a new wall which I stepped in. And yes, that's it.
That's cool. And were you at university at that time?
Yes, I mean, it was when I went to Mount Damavand, I was selected as one of the... because I studied sports science, so they selected me as one of the people from our university with other universities. So it was a gathering university summit ascent or something like this, and 2 months Damavand, then they were selecting some strong ones in mountaineering to do something in outside the country, which anyway, my destination changed. And from that time, I became a climber.
Cool. That's a great story. And so now you have had like quite a long and successful climbing career, and you traveled a lot outside of Iran for climbing, and you're a coach. Do you want to just talk a little bit about that, about what kind of what you do now?
Actually, it's really it's a really long path which I came through, because yes, from the childhood, which I had this difficult situation of what we are really, what I can be or whatever, and I didn't want to be a girl or whatever. Then I entered university, which was a whole different story. And with in university, I met this a lot of these lectures, which they were all women, and they were very confident, beautiful. They were old, but they didn't feel they are old. So these people, they really changed my mind. So I thought, I can be also a woman and strong, and I don't need to hate my own gender or being, I don't know, I don't need to be a boy because not all the boys are amazing or perfect or whatever. So it was quite a step into a situation which I understood that I have to like myself, whatever I am. So man or woman or whatever. So then these strong women, the lecturers, they also taught me a lot of ways, or they helped me in this different, I mean, just watching those coaches or those lectures gave me a lot of ideas. So slowly it changed my mind, and then I started to make my hair longer. I used nail polish, so then I started to be a woman, because it doesn't matter what I am. And at the end, then when I stepped into climbing, the climbing made me understand that I have to use my limb and my brain. And it doesn't matter how much we have muscles or how strong we were before. Now we have to put all together. We have to manage everything. And it's in sport which you fail more than you succeed. And that was interesting because a lot of people gave up when they failed several times. And then if you continue, then you get to the success point or whatever you call it, like you can send the route or whatever. And then it's more sweet than a success, which it comes easily. And when I understood this, and I made this also a kind of my lifestyle, because I was a very I was always in hurry and I was not very organized. I used my power all the time and I didn't think so much about what to do. But climbing made me to think, so I had to stop. I have to think to when you like in which moment I have to use more power than the other moment or whatever, or when I have to calm down, when I have to get aggressive to do a move, or like all this management also came to my life. And then it changed my life a lot. I start thinking, I start to make better decisions, and then I use also my confidence to stay even if people don't like what I do, like in climbing community as a woman. Still, I had my own place because I already also did martial arts. So this a lot of confidence plus this thinking and technique and mind game, all this came together. And I, when I became a coach, I saw myself after this, also after the trips I made, is never enough, but until now. Then I learned a lot from also other people in other countries and also people in my own country. So when I became a coach, I thought that I can give all this experience to other people too, especially to the woman. And I started to do it. And in the beginning was not very, like people didn't believe so much or not. But after some time, when the outcome of my courses were people who climb very beautiful or with a technique, without power, not so much wasting their energy, then it the people believed more that, oh, it's possible to learn technique in the right way. And yeah, that was what I think it made me more motivated to stay a coach. So I do a little bit of a different coaching system. So I teach outside, of course, but I don't give any certificate. Basically, most of the people who are coaching outside, they give a kind of certificate which came from federation. So you have a basic level and then the advanced level, and then you can go for coaching certificate. And I don't give any of these certificates. I just teach what to do as a technique and tactic, and use the mind, the mental aspect of climbing. And the most important is to enjoy climbing, not only to have a tick list and take everything. I have to enjoy and make a connection with the rock and like it. Then, yeah, this is what I try to do. And I really like this way.
That's great. So for you, it's not just about teaching climbing so people become better climbers, but it's a lot about using climbing as a way to develop yourself as a person. And do you care more about that from a kind of female empowerment perspective?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's not, I didn't really think about, I want to make this empowerment in women or something. I didn't think about it, but it just happened because I am also a woman. So when I talk about something, definitely is a perspective of a woman. So other women also can learn, or probably it makes sense for them. But anyway, I don't have only female climbers as my student. I have my my courses also has a lot of men, so mainly men actually, and some women.
Yeah. And so, you know, you live in a really male dominated society. Do you consider yourself a feminist?
I could be a feminist too, but I always like to have one step more, and I always like to focus on being a humanist. But of course, because I'm a woman, when I have a girl in my courses which has not enough confidence, I try more to give her confidence or talk with her. So I can see that I'm supporting women a lot because I understand them more. They are passing the same steps I did. And so I always feel I can help them a lot. So it could be a feminist, but I'm not really focusing on helping women only. I like to help everybody. But of course, women need more help to be confident or independent or believe in themselves or something like this. But it is probably feminism is a word and humanism is a word. And if you put them together, probably the result is similar thing. I don't know.
Yeah, but I guess so, you know, from our perspective, you live in a very unequal society, right? Women are treated less fairly, or it's just very male dominated. So I guess some people might care more about women's rights because women have less rights in Iran. So, you know, how political are you? Like, how much do you care about women's rights, or are you just kind of getting on with what you're doing, teaching climbing to women, teaching them things that are specific to being a woman, because that's the journey that you've gone through? But I guess there's this other element, which is the kind of political element. Yeah, I mean, how do you feel about all that?
Yeah, it is really true because, less people care about women, right? I mean, less people care about women are also a human. More a picture of a woman here. I mean, I'm talking in general. There are people who care about women, and they are... their mind is a human mind, but the most of the country, of course, is a male dominant country. They don't even look at their mother or sister, that they are also human and they have to make their own choices. So everything is like the man owns everything, the father owns everybody in the family, and then the husband owns everything. So this is really difficult to be aware of the situation and to try not to be in this game. And the problem is not only from the man. It is true, it's a male dominant country and less people care about the women's rights. But the biggest problem is less people think about the women also are human. They have right to choose what they want, to choose what they want to study, to choose who they want to live, or things like that. So You know, this is one step behind having women having the women rights. Is the first of all, the women have to have to be considered as human, and this is a big problem. And I really try in my around myself or with my sister, with my mother, because when I got to this confidence, which we are human, we can decide what we want, we can wear what color we want, we can do what we want. From the time I understood this, I tried to make my environment to understand this, like not everybody, but the one who they needed to understand. But most of these women, they don't want it. They are happy with this situation. And this is what I cannot change it. So sometimes there are feminist movements, but they don't really want you, they don't really want the women right. They just don't know what they want, because when they go home, all these women who consider themselves, we are feminists and we are supporting women rights, when they go home, they do nothing against it. They just to their small children, for example, if they have a son, they treat this son like he is the owner, and they treat to the daughter like she has to be a girl. And you know, sometimes first we have to understand what we want, and this is very difficult. If I want to support something and they don't want it. I remember this movie, which is an old Australian movie, Thorn Beard. And the situation there was very similar to what is happening between mothers and daughters. So always they just admire the son and the boy is the better gender or whatever. And they cannot give enough love to their daughter. And the daughter does the same thing. And we just talk about the right, which we don't have. So I think a lot of time we have to bring the words into the action. And first of all, we have to change ourselves, and we have to do this action, and then start to change others. And I hope this happens. And it's slowly happening, but it takes time.
Yeah, that's really interesting that people want big political changes, but really they should change something in their household first. I'd never really thought of that before. But I guess a lot of people might say that, I guess society is such a pressure, isn't it? It shapes us so much, and it's hard to kind of break out of the roles that have been given to us. And that's why I think you're such an interesting person, because you were born in a very strong society. You know, it's a society that has strong norms, and you seem to have broken out of them. You're sort of like, I don't know, you're like a bird flying out of a cage or something. Yeah, how unique are you? I mean, how many other women do you know that kind of embody this sort of like a self-power that you have that can rise above societal norms?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for thinking like this about me. I think there are countries which are even worse, like Afghanistan or Pakistan, or, you know, I think I'm not alone in this situation. So I don't see myself like a very much unique person, because I think there is a lot of us like this, but we are just spread all over. So we don't see each other. If we see each other, if we are all together, probably something will be not the same. But because it's too many people, and maybe I'm in the right corner and someone else is in the left corner and someone in other countries, I think there is a lot of people fighting for their independence. And it's definitely there were women before me, So they did some moves and some actions. Probably most, a lot of them died for this to continue their way because of, I don't know, the government or society or whatever. And a lot of them, maybe they turned off like a candle, just getting married or just, I don't know, getting covered with the life problems and children and things like that. I think there is one point in every human, and I don't know when this happened. We just have to be lucky to be able to get fresh air. You know, sometimes these people in the villages or, I don't know, very small society, they don't get even small fresh air to be able to think. So from the time they get born, then they don't have any time to think. They get quickly married, like the parents, they push them to get married. And then before they are able or they get time to think, there is two kids beside them. So then the life has to go on. Like you cannot do anything else. And I think I have been lucky to be able to breathe sometime. I mean, this is what I think. And I'm not very proud of like being kind of like, I don't know, unique or whatever, because I believe there is a lot of people like me, but they just didn't have time. So what I think I have to do now, because I cannot change anything with their life, my life or whatever, what I think I can do is to just continue and try to stand on my word and not to forget to be myself. And this is what I think I can do, and I have to stay on it. And the rest of us, probably in other countries or other places, will do the same thing, and probably small part of the world will be more colorful.
Yeah. I know this is a controversial topic, but I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on covering, because obviously in Iran women are supposed to cover themselves, and there is a bit of a movement coming from many Islamic countries that women want to be free to not cover. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, the rule in Iran is we have to cover ourselves, so we have to respect the rule even if it's not comfortable. And we born in this country, we didn't choose. So if we want to focus on this, if I want to focus on covering, I lose my life. I mean, I lose the time to think about other enjoyable things in life. So I try to do what is the best thing to do in Iran. So I respect the rule and do what we have to do. And then I try to focus on other things. And then it's very nicer and beautiful if we can do. But I think it's not an easy thing. I mean, I don't think it is not an easy thing to have several clothes or more things if the weather is warm or hot or whatever. And then you want to climb something if you have, I don't know, a lot of dress, it might be dangerous sometime or things like that. But at the end, yeah, we have to go on with the way which is the most possible way to enjoy.
Yeah. And so, yeah, there's some people in the West that consider the headscarf a kind of symbol of female empowerment. What do you think about that?
I don't think it's true. For me, you know, like you can have a headscarf and have power, or you can have a headscarf and be weak. So I think it doesn't show anything. To me, it doesn't show anything. And I don't see any outfit give anyone empowerment. Maybe in a TV show or a movie, when they want to show someone is strong, maybe they wear They tell him to wear karate clothes and people think, okay, he knows karate. But I think the empowerment happens in mind, not outside with outfit. I don't know, maybe some people get more confident wearing special outfit. I mean, not me. For me, having a scarf or not doesn't change my empowerment.
Okay. So how do you think that Iranian culture is portrayed in the West? And, you know, what should we, what would you like people in the West to know about Iran that maybe you think they don't know?
What people want to, you know, like people always hear what they want to hear and they believe what they want to believe. So I think in general, people in the West, the older generation in the West, where they had a different picture of Iran because they have seen the time before the revolution. And then after the revolution, a lot of things changed, good and bad. I don't talk about this, what is good and what is bad, but the what happened after that, because the relationship between Iran and the West countries, they got worse, or probably there were sanctions and things like that. And then probably, of course, there's always dark news going in the media from everywhere. So there is a picture of Iran, which is very scary. And I think the West, most of the people in the West see this picture. So it gives them fear, and it makes sense because they just see these things. And I think the people need to lose the fear. And then if they lose the fear, then they can see the other side of the wall. So they can see what is really happening and what is the culture and what are the other things to see, or the nature or whatever. So at the end, I think we grow up with visiting other cultures and countries, and we understand what is the reality. And I think if people are interested to know something in real, they have to step on their fear and then don't believe so much in the news. I mean, the news are not wrong 100%, but it's not all. So then Iran is a good destination if people like it. But I think Iran should be in the wishing list, not in the ticking list. So they should not see Iran as a country, okay, I've seen Iran too. No, they have to really want it. Like, I think India is the same, or China is the same. You really have to be willing that you want to see them, you want to see their culture, you want to see their people. Then it's a good trip. Otherwise, it's not really a good trip.
Yeah, I mean, attitude is everything, isn't it? I've never been to Iran, but I'd love to go. Just the climbing looks amazing and the culture looks amazing. So maybe I'll have to visit one day when all this virus situation is over.
Yes, of course. You're welcome to Iran.
Thank you. So, you know, you've traveled quite a lot, and you meet a lot of climbers from all over the world. And as climbers, we all share this thing called climbing. So in a lot of ways, we're similar. But, you know, in what ways do you think Iranian climbers might be different? Or what things do you notice that might be different when you travel to other parts of the world?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. It was really, it made me think about, you know, what I see in the community of Iranian climbers and or the Western community. We have a total different view. And this is just because, I mean, Iran have been like passing different situations with war and then the sanction and I don't know, different things and internal demonstration or outside or whatever, like things like that. So it really make people cannot go forward faster because the focus is not there. So the budget is not on the sport so much. But in Europe or in the West, you can see there is a lot of budget goes on through the sports and competition. There is a sponsoring system. But in Iran, we don't have these things. Like, nobody cares about an athlete want to go to the competition or whatever. And in general, there is two different perspectives. But what I found in Iranian community, they are really less stressed in general. This is a general, I'm talking general, there are stressy people and there are less stressed people in the West also. But in general, the people have less pressure on sending a project or a route or a first lesson. So in Europe, I've seen it very different, like how people get angry and aggressive about when they cannot do something because sponsors are expecting them to do something. So this is a different thing what I see, which can have, which is really positive anyway, because sometimes when I open a new route or friends open a new route, everybody can go and try and no, it's never closed, is never a closed project. So everyone can send it, get the first send, and I don't care, nobody care. And of course it's a nice thing to do first send, but it's not very intense. And there is also a negative part because then people don't take it so much serious sometimes. So from the beginning I started climbing, I was always looking for partner and partners were looking for, I don't know, hanging out, and they didn't take the sport very seriously. So there are these two different things, and it has positive things and negative, which is...
Yeah, it's interesting. Sorry,
there is also one big difference between these. In Iran, when people get married, mostly their sport career ends. But in Europe, people get married and they still go climbing. Here, this happens very rare because the marriage is a whole different story than visiting parents and things like that. And then they get really fat because they keep visiting families and eat food. Of course, you stay far from sport after some time.
Is that why you're not married, Naseem?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, knowing the rules of, you know, I don't want to have an owner. And if I, you know, when you have a husband, as long as you get in trouble, then everything is belong to the husband, and the woman has to run for every small right. So I think I'm just happy not having husband and going on. It's not a bad thing, but of course there are more difficulties in not having a husband. But I mean, for me, I think I'm fine at the moment.
Sounds it. And so what about in the future? Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Actually, I don't really care about where I have been or what will happen in 10 years, because I don't know what will happen. But I really like I really like to be able to climb on more rocks and different rocks and countries which I cannot go, or then maybe the borders opens and I can go climb more cracks or more things like that. This is what I like to do. And also I really like to help other people, and probably one of my wishes, if I look back in 10 years, would be that I build schools in the places which they don't even have chance to be in the very basic schools. And this is what I like to see if in 10 years I look back. And I really like to see women less operation in their faces and their body to feel more accepted. And this is what I'm really if I can do something which women can see themselves accepted or can believe in their self and they believe that they are beautiful. And yeah, these are the things I would really like this happen.
That's great. And yeah, just another controversial question to finish things off. Can you talk much about your relationship with religion?
You know, like, I think religious, I mean, in my opinion, if the religious is very true, if it's personal and private. So I think everybody has a religious inside and believes in that. And then it's good to have something, but I think it's just not so much necessary to talk about it loud or to I don't know, advertise or spread it over that what we are and what you are and what is right or wrong thing to do, you know. So I think from my from the time I could think, maybe, or maybe from the time I couldn't think, I don't remember, I was a lot focusing on the things which are changing my way. For example, I was focusing on when I was doing martial art, I was focusing so much on what can I do to be better in martial art. So then I was not really care about what food I have to eat or what cinema I have to go or what friend I have to have. You know, like, I was really focused on what I wanted to do, my aim. And that's why it was always made me away from all the different thoughts or branches which were not on my way. And now, like, climbing is a kind of what I want in all my life at the moment. And this is a kind of, I do everything to get better or to enjoy more or to bring more people into climbing outside. And this is what I focus so much. So when there are questions about other things, I just don't know what to say because I don't think about them and I don't want to get involved with those things because it's just not necessary in my way. I don't know. Does it make sense?
What you're saying is you're obsessed with climbing and that's okay.
I don't know. It's just a very enjoyable sport and a very international and the same language everybody talk is to put your foot in the correct place.
Yeah, simple things. Okay, well, is there anything you want to talk about before we finish?
I think you had one question you forgot to ask was, how do I feel in my community of climbing and international community of climbing?
Yeah, okay. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, it was a very interesting question because I had to think about it, like how it feels. And I found, or I looked around and thought about this, and I saw that I have very good feeling in both community, also our community, because I'm also, I had a good reputation in teaching and having a safe way of teaching and with mental training and the technique instead of wasting energy and all the things. So possibly some people, maybe they don't like me, but just because I'm too frank to talk about things. But rather than, I have a very good feeling in our community and also in the international community, I never felt bad or I never felt prejudices about anything, because I was always invited and I've been a guest mainly, and or I was a tourist which is climbing, and nothing is really difficult to deal with. But I don't know if I will be living in Europe or working there, then I don't know how it feels, because then this is a different story than just being a tourist climber.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good that you feel welcome in the international climbing community. That's great. Yeah, and I guess one thing I forgot actually is, do you do any kind of non-profit charity work with some of the teaching you do in these villages and things, and can people support that?
Yeah, you know, I don't have any organization or things like that who does constantly like charity activities. But sometimes when I see that I have some support, because like some people trust me, then I can just use this kind of support, and then I can support some children or whatever. Like some time ago, it was a friend of me who visited Iran and wanted to support our climbing community with some budget, like to just for bolting or things like that. And I found it that we just don't need this kind of budget, because there are people who are more in need than setting up more routes or whatever. So then in the south of Iran, there is this place which I know about it, and they don't even have the school sometimes in some of the villages. And this is there is where I like to build a school in the future. And so I talked with this friend and I said, instead of helping the climbing community, maybe we can support those kids with notebooks and books or bags or things like that. And he was also really happy. So I could do this. And if people like to support somebody or something here, they can, I mean, they can talk, or if they want to do anything.
Great. So I guess just the final thing is, you know, where can people find you? Do you have an Instagram account? How can they kind of follow what you're up to?
Yeah, I mean, people can follow me, or they can contact me on Instagram or on Facebook. It's all in the same name.
Okay, well, if there's nothing else, then should we end it there?
Yeah, I think it's okay. I mean, if you have all the questions done and if you're happy with it, I'm happy with it.
Awesome. Yeah, well, thanks so much for coming on. I've really enjoyed both our conversations. It was actually a real pleasure to get to speak to you again. So thanks a lot for your time.
You're welcome. That was a pleasure. And thanks for choosing me as to have a talk or things going on this way. It's beautiful.
Great. Thanks a lot, Nassim. We did actually stop the conversation there and I stopped recording, but then we started chatting again and the coronavirus came up and I thought Nassim had some really interesting points, so I started recording again. So if you're really bored of anything to do with the coronavirus, maybe stop listening now. But if you are really interested in the coronavirus, then keep listening.
About this virus, I really feel that it's help us to slow down a little bit, because I always saw people are running around, buying houses, doing this, learning language, doing this, doing that, losing their time. They felt like they are staying behind and everybody is running. And I think with this virus, we are a little bit, we have to slow down and do nothing. And this doing nothing is also nice. And this is one thing which I felt a little bit satisfied with what happened. I mean, of course, I'm sorry for all the people who lost their beloved family or friends. But beside that, I'm just talking. And also, one part was when we always feel very, you know, from the borders, we can't get visa, we can't go wherever we want. And then in this situation, I feel maybe other countries feel a little bit of what we feel during the whole life. So you have to apply for everything and then they fail, so they refuse us, then we cannot go. I remember when I applied for to come to UK, and I had visa, I had an invitation from DMM, which is a strong invitation, it's from the company, and they just failed, they refused, even though I paid about 300 300, what is English?
Pounds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was,
that's a lot of money.
Yeah, because, you know, because we didn't have the embassy in Iran, so I have to apply in Turkey, and then I have to go to Istanbul, and if I don't want to go to Istanbul, then I have to go to an office in Antalya. So then they got some money for that. So, you know, at the end, I really wanted to go to UK and see the rocks and any, like any other country. And then when they refused, I was really crying for one day, the whole day I was sitting, because I was very breakdown. Like how they can tell me you're not allowed to come to this country, even though DMM gave me the invitation, I paid the whole price they wanted and all the things. And it was really difficult to handle. And I don't know, maybe you, everybody will understand only if they get this feeling that with all your freedom or whatever, then, and with all your, I don't know, talent or your work you have done as a, I don't know, a sportswoman or whatever, then they just tell you, no, you cannot come. So you feel like you are a criminal or whatever. And during these days, maybe some people feel what we feel.
And yeah, definitely. I mean, like, you know, we're just so used to having everything work for us. Like, we can fly where we want, we can go where we want. And I do think that it is giving us a bit of a taste of what it's like for a lot of people around the world who can't just do what they want all the time. They can't go to any country they want at any time. And, you know, I was in Spain just now, and it was, we were getting worried that we might get stuck, that we might not be able to go to France, that we might not get home. And it is giving us a little bit of a taste, I think, of what it means to live in some other places in the world.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, and still we are not in the countries which have war. So imagine people which have war in their own country, they just have nothing about the simple aspects of life, and they really suffer. And I think it's good that we step now, we step back, and then the economy failed. So, and now we can see the life is going on with less money. economy should not be always on the high level, and I don't know, things like that. So it's also an experience probably that we can see we will not get bankrupt if something goes wrong and if we have less money. And I don't know, we have to get the lesson anyway from this, me, everybody.
There will be lots of lessons to learn from this. it's interesting to me that you know, I asked you, oh, it'd be cool if you could talk a little bit about the coronavirus, and you were like, oh, it's not really an interesting question. For me, it's not an interesting topic, because for us, I mean, it's just different perspectives, right? But for us, nothing like this has happened ever in our generation. We've never had our personal freedom and standard of living affected in this way before. And so it's so interesting just to hear you be like, oh, it's fine. It's not very interesting. What's going on?
No, you know what is there? What is why I am really not interested in this topic. And if you have seen, I have not posted anything about the coronavirus, while every climber, every runner, everybody is posting stay at home, hashtag stay, you know, because I feel things happen. Like, of course, this is a virus, and of course it will, now everybody is confused because there is no medicine or there is no vaccine for that. So it's a normal thing that we will, probably a lot of us will die from this. And we have to wash our hands and listen to what the doctors said. And to me personally, I really like to listen to everybody who is specialized in something. For example, if I want to listen to somebody talk about coronavirus and advise me, it would be definitely a doctor. I would never listen to a climber or runner or a dancer or whatever. And these days, just because, I mean, I don't mean anybody, I don't mean about one person or two person especially, but just in general, everybody want to have more followers, just post something and put hashtag stay at home. And then Instagram will post your, will make the story of your post, and then people follow. And I really think this is like a fashion. And beside the virus is dangerous and we have to do what is right thing to do, beside that, people are abusing this situation and they look at it like a fashion and to make their followers and to get more attention. And then they start to give advices to what to do or what. And I think it's not correct that in any situation, me, I am a coach, I am a climber. I can talk about the climbing, I can talk about technique or I can talk, but I don't really like to talk instead of a doctor or say something or an advice. Then, you know, it is interrupting that people have to listen to who. And that's why everybody likes to talk about it and give advices. And I'm really not into this. And the very funny thing which has happened now, you know, people use masks. They use the mask which it avoid if they cough or whatever, things like that. And now here they are using, and you know, like advices from World Health Organization is also like to use mask when you are sick or you are in a populated area which somebody might sneeze or cough or whatever. So it's not avoiding the virus if you just put the mask and not washing your hand, right? So even they say that. But now in the street in Iran, when I walk and sometimes see people, they use the black cotton masks, like made of normal cloth. Mm. And they have also brands on it, like Adidas or Nike. It's like a fashion. And then the woman especially, they make this mascara on their eyes. So then with this mask and the cover, with his eyes, which is really coming out black, he's like a real fashion. So this is not really what we have to go with these advices, you know. And that's why I get a little bit like somehow a little bit tired of these discussions and talks, and I want to get away from things like that, you know. And that's why what I told you, I'm not very interested in this topic, because it slowly became like a fashion, not something we have to do together, you know.
Yeah, I get the impression you don't like fashion, Nasim.
I don't like to have something blind, you know, like to just copy something, because some climbers put this as, put this stay at home. Now I do this also, and another one do this. You know, like I just don't like to do things because the other people did it. Yeah. Like not everybody have to. And that's it. It's like, but nothing against people who do this.
Yeah, it's a difficult balance. We have this phrase, virtue signaling. So it's kind of like a bit of a way of saying, look at me, aren't I so virtuous? I'm joining in with everything that everyone's doing and, you know, recommending and being a good person and everything. But then on the other hand, if you're a professional climber, I guess it's nice to kind of be a role model for other people. So then if you really believe that people should be staying at home and then you talk about staying at home, maybe it's sort of like a nice way to just kind of show that you're doing this thing that you believe in. So it's sort of, I don't know, I find like I agree with you, but I also think that maybe there's room to do it in a way that's meaningful and nice.
Yeah, probably it makes a little bit more sympathy between people when they see, oh, our role model also stays at home, so I don't suffer as much, you know, I don't suffer so much because now we are together having this situation. This is true. It's just my personal ideas about, I like people listen to the right person, as because now we have a lot of scientists and we have a lot of doctors, we talk about it, but now our actors, how do you call it, like the the famous actors
talk
more than the scientists, you know?
Totally, yeah. Yeah, that's why we wanted to get an expert on the podcast. I don't know if you listened, but we recently had a virologist on the podcast to talk about it, because there seems to be a lot of misinformation going around. And I guess the reality of the situation is that right now, even the scientists don't know what's going on, because this is a new virus and there's lots of unknowns at the moment.
Yeah, we just have to, I mean, what I think is to stay calm and wait for the people who are really working in this situation, like scientists or doctors which are working in laboratory or whatever. And those are the one who can maybe make the vaccine and then we can use later. And I think I'm really willing to hear something from those people. And this, when there is a big mess, everybody put the training at home, I'm like, oh my God, this is really a big bomb. Which is also at some point is funny, but sometimes it's too much. Yeah. And anyway.
And we're only at the start of this, you know, we could be locked up for months. So who knows what's going to go on with social media and stuff.
Exactly. This is really, at the end, I'm positive things will go on very good, and we will mankind will survive anyway, because we are smart and think and whatever, but then we will, I hope we do better in next action when this something happened, then we can decide faster and do things more correctly or things like that.
Yeah, we're better prepared for the next virus.
Wash our hands.
Yeah, wash your hands, people. Okay, should we leave it there then?
Yes, okay.